So funny. Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund in the offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles in the middle of the Art Deco wonder known as the Eastern Columbia Building. This is your Chilpak Hollywood Hour, and I'm here with my co-host, as always, Mr. Phil Larness, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Dean Haglund.
You're welcome.
I actually feel today it's kind of my Chilpak Hollywood Hour because we have a guest
yes.
who is one of my favorites.
One of your favorites.
You know, I mean, among other things in a long and successful... Don't interrupt me.
I am agreeing with you. I am your favorite. I'm not just one of them. I am your favorite.
In a long and storied and delightful career.
Delightful.
I happen to also be a star of maybe my favorite television show of all time. So we have lots to talk about. And we're welcoming Mr. Gary Anthony Williams.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you both. I had no idea that you were such a fan of Cousin Skeeter on Nickelodeon so many years ago.
Well,
he was a puppet, but I was real. And he talked to me.
I'll be the judge of that.
Okay, all right.
Wait a minute, Cousin Skeeter?
To have patterned so much of my mannerisms after Cousin Skeeter as I've done.
Yeah.
It really is quite a thrill.
That is a thrill.
How did the two of you meet? Let's start there.
Wow. Let's go back. The year was 1990s. Eight or nine.
You and I don't remember how we met.
Yeah, so that's true.
If you don't remember,
that's
fine.
Yeah,
The first glance
across the room of a party.
I don't remember the first glance. Were we doing?
But you thought he was a hot blonde, right? Because it was from behind.
Yeah, I had the long hair.
Knew he was, especially when he turned full frontal.
Hello, what?
Huh?
Awkward.
Hello,
awkward.
This has been your Chilpak Hollywood hour.
Yes, and good night.
That really did go by fast. That was really a quick hour.
I have to say, it was an improv at the Acme or something. Perhaps.
Sure.
Maybe it was. Remember, Dave Bushnell would put those shows together
there
and just have a big mash of people coming in.
That was before he got the dog. Later, he got a dog.
Charlie.
You know this about Bushnell.
Yes.
Yeah, but then he was dogless. Just wandering aimlessly about doing improv shows.
Remember that? Like a nomad. So then from there. Did many
improv shows together.
All over.
Some that we should not have been doing.
No.
Honestly.
Yeah.
America still calls me on a weekly basis and go, why did you do that show?
Yeah. There was only four people. Remember that one show we did where it was you, me, Frank Van Keeken in a theater in North Hollywood and there was like nobody there.
Yeah.
Like literally, I think it was McShane was in the audience.
Sure.
And perhaps my ex-wife.
Yeah.
And
it's one of those things where we could have gone to their homes and done the show, and it would have been better off for everybody else instead of them having to come out.
And yet we did an hour and a half. I think it went from like 11:30 to 1 in the morning improvising.
As we said before we started recording today, we were so young.
We were so young.
And we knew it, and we relished it. We relished our youth.
Exactly. And how great was that show? I still think about it.
So your training is in improv.
It is, yeah. I started doing improv and Shakespeare at the same time back in Atlanta.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Hot Atlanta, baby.
Where we always go once a year.
You go there for your cons, don't you?
Little Dragon Con.
Yeah.
Little something.
Love that city. It's very green.
Very green.
It is. Yeah. I mean, the color is green.
Like it's not really environmentally progressive.
God, no. Everything's painted green.
No, the smoke, the mayor is smoking gasoline cigarettes down there. It is not a green city environmentally, but the color of it.
Very
it does have the MARTA. It does have the MARTA train.
MARTA is pretty rocking. It's a clean way to transport yourself around.
That's right.
Like I said, long story, distinguished career.
Sorry.
Let's do it.
What would you say you are most recognized for?
It depends on the color of people's skin and their age.
What?
Yep. The old whiteys, and I say this.
That would be me.
Very reverent. No, you're not old enough to be one of these whiteys.
How?
If they're older whiteys, like around 56 or so, then it's going to be Boston Legal.
Yes.
If they're young.
Apparently, I am an old whitey.
You're an old whitey. You are now. Or about your age and anywhere now to 12, it's Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, yes. Of course. That's still in reruns.
Yes. And then if you're a blackie, and you're fairly young, it's either Undercover Brother or
Soul Plane. Soul Plane, yeah. Which I watched again. It was just on. Yeah. Those residual checks.
They keep coming. Gifts. God, I am exceedingly rich, Dean. And unlike most actors, I built it into my contract where my residual checks get larger and larger and larger as it runs.
How did you do that?
It's called the reverse pyramid.
I need that agent.
Yeah.
That is very clever.
Yep. It's just another way of showing how much this industry is just set up to favor the black man.
Yeah. The black man has it all. I think Tyler Perry said it best when he said, "Hey." And I agree with
him
wholeheartedly. Yeah.
And I love that I actually say that it favors the black man. When I'm looking at Gary, he's got a microphone that has tape falling off.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a toy. Yeah. That we
I don't even know if this is a real microphone. I'm holding live wires plugged into your
It was that or an extension cord you talk into. One of the two.
I always find this fascinating, though, with Dean, that you know his background in improv, and he becomes so recognized then for, you know, the X-Files, for Langley, which almost in a way has nothing to do with his improv
background. Right, that's kind of cool.
And with you, then you say this whole generation of people know you from Boston Legal, which again, although it might seem very improvised at times because of the irreverent humor, I would think that every word on that
is very specific.
But so I've asked Dean this before, how did... or does it at all, your improv training serve you in an experience like Boston Legal?
I think the whole idea of just totally keeping, like even if words are, if you have to be married to the words on the page, like the emotion and people coming in and being able to connect with people and people making sudden turns, that's all definitely an improv-based thing. That's all straight up in the moment kind of stuff.
Right.
Because every take was not the same, you know, across from William Shatner, he's not going to do the same thing twice exactly the same way. You know, he's an actor and he wants to like experiment a little bit. So being able to go with their takes on stuff, even if it's the same lines, emotionally it's not coming from the same place.
Right. It gives you that flexibility.
Exactly.
Which I like so much.
You also had what I would think would be quite a joyous experience in getting to play basically two parts.
Yeah.
Clarence and Clarice.
And sometimes more, yeah. I played Clarence, who was like a very, very shy guy. So shy, he really couldn't make eye contact with people. And then Clarice, which was his female alter ego.
Who I think we meet first. I think we get to know her before. Her first?
Yeah, I just came on the show. It was a one-time kind of deal where, actually, I was about to go home to Atlanta, and they said, "Hey, the show Boston Legal wants you to do an episode." And I was like, "Nah. I don't want to do it. I need to go to Atlanta for a week or so." And I'm like, no, it's a really good show. I was like, nah, I'm not interested. And I didn't know the show.
Right.
And then I talked to some buddies, and they're like, "Oh, it's a really good show, Gary. It's got this guy in, and it's really good." I was like, "Yeah, I just want to take a break." And then they cut. It was so stupid of me. Not, I guess it wasn't in the long run. So I did the first episode as Clarice, who was she was coming in. She wants to sue her boss because he wouldn't give her time off to be pregnant, and everybody knew it was a dude. Like everybody knew I was a guy, but they were just looking at me like, "What? It's a man, right?" And then after that episode aired, the makeup guy Stevie Mack said, "You're going to be back on this show, and you're going to be back as a regular." And he's like, "I'm never wrong."
Wow.
And then they called me the week after it aired. On a Tuesday, they called me on a Friday and said, "Hey, they'd like to make you a regular on the show."
What? So, just like that.
And that was my Hollywood gift. You know,
that
what I mean?
Was nice.
And what I love about Clarence and Clarice, among other things, is that kind of juxtaposition of those two characters, one actor playing these two, and they really were, like I say, two different characters, in that they were both fully drawn. They both had their own inner lives almost. Yeah. And it was, there never has been a show like it, and in that it could go from the ridiculous to the sublime so quickly. Dean and I have talked about this before. It could go from breaking the fourth wall to sneaking up and moving you in such unexpected ways so quickly. Yeah. And I feel that really describes Clarice and Clarence.
I think he kind of does that with all of his characters. And the weird thing about him, him is David E. Kelly, the writer. He is amazingly prolific. Mm-hmm. And there was once there was a Friday when we had just finished an episode. It worked on usually eight day cycles, but it changed. And we had just finished an episode on a Friday. We were supposed to start shooting on a Monday. They were like, well, we don't have a script yet. He hasn't even started writing the script yet. So we'll probably push a few days. Then on Saturday, he delivered a script. And he literally had not started writing it. He just wrote it all on Friday, the full script, and he handwrites everything. And then someone has to type it.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, not really.
Wow, and he delivered that's faster?
The script, and then we were shooting on Monday.
Holy crap. And he longhands it like Woody Allen.
Longhands it, yeah. Yeah.
Holy smokes.
You know, in some places, long hands, that means something totally different.
Like, oh, man. Is that a Lanta phrase? Should I not say that at Dragon Con?
I got long handed. That means something totally different. But in his case, it just means he uses a pen.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. While masturbating.
Yeah. Yes. While masturbating. While he long hands.
The one thing I think is a colossal, huge missed opportunity, and maybe someone is listening who will rectify this situation. And then, yes, I just said rectify.
Yeah, wow.
Wow, right after longhand.
Christian Clemens?
Yeah, Christian.
And you should have had a spinoff series.
You know, they did a couple of cool things. With Christian is amazing. First of all, he was on the
great
show.
Actor.
Yeah, amazing actor. And you know, I hate to say this on radio because nobody wants to hear it, but just a nice guy. nobody wants to hear that.
I had a chance to meet him, and I was really...
pleased.
Yeah, and just like amazed at how authentically nice.
Yeah, just a genuinely nice guy. Who I did see kick a child in the balls once. Right. That's what they need to hear.
Justified.
On the radio.
Justified.
Yeah. It was justified. This kid was a total ass. He deserved everything Christian's right foot gave
him. Can I please have an autograph, sir? You're my favorite.
And when Christian gets that look in his eyes, Katie, bar the door because balls are going to get kicked. And he has a dummy at home that he practices kicking children on.
But when a child is out of line like that, asking for an autograph, at an autograph session, it would be rude not to kick the kids. Because we have a responsibility to collectively raise the children in our society.
Yep. And here's a weird thing. It was a little girl who was begging for the autograph. But Christian, he said, is there a boy in the house? And he called a boy over to kick him in the balls just to prove a point, you know, to the little girl. But getting back, spin off.
I can see it now.
No, they did a couple of cool episodes because we were such both weirdo characters. Oh, what I was saying was Christian was on the show even before I was. He hadn't won an Emmy as a guest star on the show before he came on as a regular. But everybody was going, why isn't this guy on as a regular? And David E. Kelly's pretty smart, so he brought him in. They did a couple of episodes, you know, that kind of focused on us and our weirdnesses. That would have been a good time.
Totally.
But when I got the job, they said, you'll be there a while, and then he'll start writing for some other character, then you just won't be there. So I was like, okay. So I knew that going in.
Right.
Like, that's the way he does. You know, he doesn't think stuff out
in a long arc.
In advance. Yeah. He just writes.
And it's really refreshing also, and why I say there might not ever be a show like it, because Dean and I rant about this all the time, that we're in this era where a show almost has to be fully formed from the moment it's first broadcast.
Right.
And even William Shatner as Denny Crane, who might become the most indelibly linked image to that show, he started in that character as a guest on The Practice.
On the other show,
and that's what made David E. Kelly say, okay, this works.
Yeah.
And I love that.
The cool thing about it being on that show, and the good thing is, like, either one of you could have easily been on that show because he would choose funny people and put them on the show. Like, and you could, it might be a serious role, but he always, like, there wasn't anybody on that show who wasn't, like, knocked down funny.
Right.
Even Mark Valley never got a chance to show it, but
it had been so funny on Fast Eddie.
Yeah. So he's just a funny, funny guy. Julie Boyd got to show it a little. Now she's getting to show it more on Modern Family.
Yeah.
But everybody's funny. Even Spader has this wicked sense of humor. And, of course, Shatner is a funny dude.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So now, is he going to bring that sensibility to Wonder Woman? Isn't that what he's working on next?
Who is?
David E. Kelly wrote that.
I didn't know. I didn't get it.
You didn't get a call to be Wonder Woman?
Oh.
What?
I could have at least been the guy who polished the jet, right?
Well, there was rumor that Clarice might be the new
Oh, yeah.
Well figured Wonder Woman.
You know
it's
what?
About time.
Okay. And the leather outfit.
Because you know what I had done? I closed off my phones so I didn't get calls from people. Now I'm going to open them back up because he probably has been trying to call me.
To come on, Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
That's it.
I can't wait to do that.
That's good. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Okay, so yoga mat. I don't know a thing about this.
Okay, go ahead. You go. Tag.
Maybe we'll save yoga mat for this.
Really? Yeah.
No, because I want to get into short films and discussion. We need to talk about the festival.
Right. But, I thought yoga mat would be the opener.
But this is something I've always wanted to ask Gary about. If I am not mistaken, your first film was a movie called Radioland Murders.
That was the first movie. Yeah, that was. That was the first movie I ever did.
And from what I know about that film, it was produced by George Lucas.
By the way, yes, but Dean Haglund is in the house, and he is from Canada, and I think you probably feel more comfortable if we say film.
No, I got my U.S. citizenship.
The film was produced by George Lucas.
Not the film.
It seems to me, from what I've read about this, that this would have been an odd way to break into movies from the production experience, because the whole thing that I remember about this movie was that it was like it advertised as a cast of thousands, most of whom were digitally created.
Were they?
Wow. At a time when this was not being done. That it was like 8 actors and then 1,000 digital creations.
Well, I didn't even know that.
They were the extras? Who was digitally created?
I don't know.
The extras. Wow, really?
He made this movie to sell the
software.
To sell the software, basically.
Are you joking my face off?
No.
I had no idea.
They didn't mention that on set?
They didn't mention that.
You're going to be just...
I was just acting.
A sales tool?
I was like a joke. Well, what's that guy's name? Not Brian Ben. I'll think of his name in a minute. But you would hear this African native and this Englishman talking, and then they would pan and show us, and then I was the Englishman, and the white dude was the African
native. See.
So we shot it. It was very simple, but it was working with a lot of, like you said, a cast of thousands. So it was really cool meeting all those guys. And it was my very first film. And then I go home to Atlanta because we shot in North Carolina, and then I get a call about a month later going, hey, they lost that reel. They totally lost it.
What?
They totally lost it. And then we had to go back and reshoot it.
Remake the magic.
Yeah.
Wow. That is insane.
At least they did that. I
think Howard the Duck, he just lost a bunch of it and didn't even bother.
Well, no. To reshoot it. John Landis introduced my thesis film.
Oh, yeah, right.
At UCLA. And he told us it was a comedy. And he told this story about his favorite film that he'd ever made was Spies Like Us. And not because it was his best, but because he got to travel to 4 different continents making it. It paid for him to see the world.
Right.
But they lost an entire reel of the film. But because it's this globe-trotting adventure, to put that reel back together would have involved going to 3 continents and 7 different countries. So a $17 million film would have now cost $30 million to go back and recreate that. So he said, I remember sitting in my office that day making the choice. We spend $10 million more to release a good movie, or we spend no more money and release a mediocre movie. Yes, let's do that.
They took the mediocre run.
What did you learn from that? Always choose mediocre.
I don't know. I guess, sleep your way to the middle.
That's exactly.
Mediocrity is okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. That is pretty amazing.
It is amazing.
Choice.
Oh, but losing a whole reel of 3, that's also, somebody should have got fired for that.
I think it was a lab mistake. It was, back then everything was being processed through the laboratory. And he did say that, of course, they're insured. And the lab had to provide them the film stock.
Here's
your film stock.
Yeah. There you go.
And of course, we'll do the processing again for free.
I think every movie that loses a reel, they should act out the part with hand puppets. And just put it in. Do not explain. Just put it in the hand puppet section of the movie.
Yeah.
And go, because how much would that cost?
That's nothing.
Millions.
I know. It's a couple slides.
The storyboards? Just do the storyboards.
Exactly. I'll show you my storyboards I drew later.
Can't wait.
Yes. Anyway, so then where were we not 2 Sundays ago, you and I? Just over across the street. Standard. Oh, no, what was it? The Tokonami Lounge. Elevate Lounge.
At the Elevate Lounge.
Yes, because it was closing night.
It was closing night of the LA Comedy Shorts Film Festival.
Which you...
I am the co-founder and artistic director of.
Look at that.
You know what? People, when they see me walking down the street, they don't know what a big shit I am. But once I tell them for an hour or so, they kind of get the idea. Yeah, Jeannie Rochar and I and her husband Ryan Hickman started this film festival. We started it 3 years. We had a film, a short comedy film.
What was that called?
Called I Own You. And it was kind of a question about my life. I married a whitey, and at one point...
And by calling her that, that's put a wedge in the relationship.
Oh, okay, first of all, people need to understand that's the most affectionate word I could possibly use.
Okay.
No, I married a Caucasian American.
Very good.
And at one point...
Actually, I'm sorry, as the whitey, you just say American then. It's assumed.
It's assumed. You should go under. I married an assumed Caucasian. You're all right, though. Assumed.
It is implied. I had this in a casting session one time where I wanted to cast an actor who is of Filipino descent for a role, and the studio executive said, but that role is for a white person. And I'd written it.
Uh-huh.
And they said, and I said, well, that's interesting. What makes you think that it's a white person? They said, well, it doesn't say that it's a person of color.
You gotta say.
So it is implied Caucasian.
Okay.
Unless it says otherwise.
I love that term, assumed American and implied Caucasian. Please write that down. So
that's going to be my t-shirt. Yeah. I'm going to wear
it. I married non-African-American. Non-African-American. I don't even know how to say it anymore. I'm afraid now.
We've got to be so politically correct on this show.
Okay, anyways, I married her. And then I find out that her grandmother's last name and my grandmother's last name are the same. And they are from the same area. And I thought, what if... You guys owned us.
Right.
You may have owned us. So I called my friend Jeannie Rochar, who is an excellent writer, and I said, let's write this movie, I Own You, and it's about
this very situation.
Leslie's family might own my family. And so we wrote it, and it did really well at film festivals. And we were sitting in a film festival in San Diego. It was all dramas and then our comedy. It was like literally in every other film, somebody died. There was a murder. There was an abortion. There was a guy literally getting sucked out into space. Everybody died. And then the comedy came and we turned to each other and went, why isn't there just a short comedy film festival with nothing else but short comedies? And there wasn't. We're like, let's do it. We tried to do it at the Acme Comedy Theater, but it grew too big in the first year.
Right.
And then the Downtown Independent, so we were looking for a theater.
Yeah.
And called
And that just opened like 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Or 3 years ago.
And is this where it is?
It was just,
And this is where, and people love when we do a production meeting on the air.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about maybe we should run out for some screenings.
Some screenings for The Truth Is Out There, for our film.
Okay, great.
I think they're very cool. They've worked with us.
Well, you're a big deal. I mean, you might be our entree into the...
I literally wasn't a big shit until I hooked up with the Downtown Independent.
Is that right?
Now I wear only the finest silks. Everything. I don't know if you guys have time, but we could just take 20 minutes to fill my clothing. Everything I have on is filled right.
That's what we do to all our guests, regardless.
It's a 20-minute fill.
That's right. That's our warm up. Yeah.
So yeah, it started from there, and then we hooked up with Funny or Die and Atom.com, which is part of Comedy Central, and Atomic Wedgie.
How hard is that? I mean, okay, I want to start a film festival of, 9-hour art house documentaries.
I would recommend you do that.
Right, okay. So my first thing I do, I get on the horn, and I call a theater going, I got this idea for a film festival. Can I come in?
Yeah. First thing we did was call, we said, we'll do it at the Acme, and we called them and talked to them, and they were like, let's do it. Because, like you said, we probably met there.
Yeah.
And they were like, let's do it. But then instantly, once Funny or Die and The Onion came on the first year, it got too big for there.
Oh, right.
So the first thing I did was try to hook us up, me and Jeannie, tried to hook us up with people who are known names in comedy, like Funny or Die. And we called them, and they said, The Onion, a friend of ours, Chris Ann, worked for The Onion, and we talked to them, and they were like, yeah, we'll do an advertising spot with you guys, and we call Funny or Die, and they were immediately, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then some of the other people were tougher to get on, but once they saw who was involved, it lent credibility, you know.
So you gathered all of that resources even before you had laid down the physical, so that you had momentum going in with these things.
Yeah.
And then did you already have film submissions coming in, or how did that start?
We got those people involved, some of them involved, before the film submissions started coming in.
So that's the smart way to do it then. Get your...
I guess. That's the way we did it.
It's lot of work though, isn't it?
It is an incredible amount of work.
I mean, it seemed to me that it's every bit as intensive and in some ways fairly similar to actually producing a film.
It's an incredible amount. Luckily, we brought on a lady, Kelly Frazier, who is a film producer.
Uh-huh.
And she has helped us on that side of the festival. This year, she came on board with us. She's helped us on that side of the festival immensely.
Right.
But it is more work than you could have. And people think, you get all the money from the submissions. As you see, like, our monies go out to parties, to giving people prizes, to helping set up meetings.
It's lovely.
People win meetings with us. You know, it's like, there's something to do with your short other than just show it.
Yeah,
show
it around. You know what? For people, if I hope film festivals make money, and especially good film festivals. But you go to really good, memorable film festivals, and no matter what amount of money they might be making, those people are smart enough and creative enough and clever enough to make more money easier doing something else.
Yeah, I definitely.
It's clear that they do it because they love it.
I definitely make more money doing doing my other side job than that. And we really did want to make a festival. The reason we did it was to make a festival like a festival we would want to attend with our short comedy film.
Right.
That does mean pumping money back into it. You know?
Would you ever think about touring with that festival?
Yeah, we're already doing it. Like, wow. We're not doing it ourselves, but there are some festivals who are touring our Best of Fest packages already.
Nice.
They just come straight to us and get... So they don't have to procure their own comedy shorts.
Right.
They take ours. And then this year will be putting our entire festival, 4 days of programming, on the road as well.
Nice.
Wow.
Because that's always been a dream of mine, to do that.
Yeah. To tour a festival.
Yeah.
Sort of like the Spike and Mike animation festival kind of thing.
I would love if we had time to do exactly that ourselves. But luckily, some other festivals, and we're also working with Austin. They're going to be showing our packages as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
We went to this place called the International Film Festival Summit, which is Indian for boring white people. but we hooked up with a bunch of great film festival friends there.
Yeah.
It's like festivals from all around the world, like all of them. You know?
Well,
also, you don't need to say boring white people. I mean, white people is assumed boring. It's assumed boring.
Okay.
Yeah. No, you say interesting white guy if he's interesting.
If he's interesting. Otherwise, I just say, okay. This is new for me. There is a lot of newness. A
lot of newness.
Because until 2 weeks ago, legally, I was not able to say the word white.
We are constantly changing. I'm sure you noticed this growing up as a kid. Caucasian History Month. We're constantly calling ourselves something different in the social studies.
We know who you are. Stop changing your names. We get it. You're the guys who come in every movie and save the day. We know who you are.
See,
where would those Avatarians be without you guys? Or the Brazilians in the Fast Five movies.
Right. Or the Brazilians in real life. Yes. Or indigenous people around the world.
Where would the indigenous people be?
Is that the plot of Fast Five?
I haven't seen it. Tell you what, man. And you know, Dean, you do know this about me. I don't. I love the fact that everybody's a different color. I think we should mix it up as much as possible. But it is always funny to me when I am sitting in a movie and it's always a white dude who comes in. And yes, in Fast Five, a wonderful actor. I don't know if you know his name is Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel. I know him for his D&D play.
Well, Mr. Diesel, he does come in and he shows that Brazilian who's running things in a horrible way a thing or two. He shows him a thing or two.
Wow.
It was a very multiracial cast. And I went there. And I was like,
you have Paul Walker.
What?
Paul Diesel.
Yeah. I mean, right there. You know, diversity.
Dwayne Johnson.
Rock. The Rock is of questionable heritage.
He could be Hawaiian.
He might be Hawaiian. He
animal,
might be
Obama. Mineral.
I think he's very Obama-ish, isn't he? He's a Hawaiian, half white.
Maybe.
Perhaps.
I don't know.
Tiger Woods?
So wait a sec. Were you...
One could.
I feel like Tiger Woods really became black fast when the problem.
He was a great black golfer and just a horrible Asian husband.
That's what it was.
No, it's actually true. When he first won the Masters, I was in the San Francisco Bay Area and I was watching local news up there and an Oakland station, KTVU, they were promoting the sports report that was coming up, and in sports. Tiger Woods does something no other African American has ever accomplished. And I truly flipped channels to Channel 5 in San Francisco, and the sports prompt was Tiger Woods does something no Asian American has ever done.
Oh, that
done
is so before. Great. But I think that to me is cool, though. Yeah. Like, everybody's going to claim them all of a sudden.
And it turned out that what they were talking about in both instances was he was the first African American and the first Asian American to ever wear a green blazer. That's what it was.
Wow, the coloring.
Black. Had nothing. They didn't even get to the golf. Because
to the golf. To the golf.
Again, who other than a white guy would wear a green?
I tell you, I will not. I won't.
You will not.
I might be doing it now.
I might be.
You might be.
Okay, so wait. Why did you go to... You went to the premiere of Fast Five then? Or is it already out?
Oh, yeah. I went to the premiere of Fast Five. I got this invite from my voiceover agent. I'm like, hey. And so I was like...
Were you in it?
I'll go. No.
Were just like...
When you've reached a certain level...
With your voiceover agent.
With my voiceover agent. I literally did not know why I was there. So I go there.
I'm looking around
for someone I know to go, hey, Gary, I'm glad you came. I invited you. And I don't see anyone I know.
Which is odd.
And then, it really was. Yeah. And then they come out and go, yeah, thanks everyone for attending the diversity screening of this. I was like, oh, it's a diversity screening. They needed a black guy.
Oh, no way.
My God.
Really?
No, but there were. But the Asian population was well represented.
Uh-huh.
The African American. There were a few whites sprinkled.
Did you do a red carpet? The whole?
There was no red carpet. I did not. I really didn't. It really was one of those cases where I didn't know.
Anybody.
Why I was going there at all. But I thought, well, there must be some reason I'm supposed to be here.
Lifetime achievement award.
I thought somebody's going to hand me something and shake my hand and go, you know what?
Good job on that.
Thank you
for saving it.
Yeah.
Nobody handed
me anything.
Nothing. Snacks? Free snacks.
There were snacks. There was wine and there was beer. In wine glasses.
Delicious.
There was plenty of food after.
Uh-huh.
I want to know, if I could turn the room serious just a minute.
Turn it down.
I want to know, Gary Anthony Williams, movie star, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure,
television star. Episodic TV star.
An amazing romp on TV.
Five generations have been raised on his work on television.
Sure.
Sure.
Shakespearean actor.
Sure,
Improv comic. Why short films? Why do you still do short films?
Because he is an anti-short film guy.
No, there's just... Ordinarily, there's nothing longer to me than a short film.
Yeah. Well, you obviously have not seen the length of my shorts.
Oh, I'm...
Wait a sec.
I don't know.
Maybe we will. I think it's a good time to learn how to use the edit button.
No, I am directing a short film right now because again, I don't like them as a rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. And only Nixon can go to China. And I don't know what I mean by that. But I am curious. So why, It clearly it's a passion of yours, and what about it?
Yeah.
What about that form?
There are a couple of different reasons. Number one is I think it is a very accessible way for a filmmaker now, say a new filmmaker, to get his name out there and get seen. The short films are an excellent calling card. Right?
They are still? I would think it's...
Not just still. It's even increased.
Really?
Because there are more people looking for short film content. Now.
Oh, right.
The people at Atomic Wedgie, that's one of our sponsors, and they're really Fremantle. The first year they hired like 3, 4, or 5, I can't remember which one it was, filmmakers straight from there, made a deal with them to produce short comedy content for their site.
I mean, really?
That's straight from being at a film festival to getting a check doing what you want to
right.
do.
What?
It's an amazing calling card for those people. And for serious actors like... Bryan Cranston, he helped us out this year. He's done several short films lately. But for those guys who just want to do their own thing, that's another way to do your own thing without it costing you a whole bunch of money.
I want to do my own thing.
And now you can.
Well, I can.
And yet, you know, you can see a crappy short film the same way you can see a regular crappy movie, but think of the time you spend.
Right.
A crappy short film is not useless.
Exactly. But, I haven't invested all of
well,
that.
Well, that's what we were saying on our show. Oh, I don't know when it's going to air.
Three.
So we said it on a show. You know, there really is no good film is too long. No bad film is too short.
Yeah, yeah.
That's.
I mean, here's what we do. Me, Jeannie, Ryan Hickman. We sit down. This year we watched 800 short films.
Good.
And then we narrowed down to 80 or so to put in the festival.
So you saw some really bad.
I saw, well, yeah. 90% of them are just. Are not good.
Right.
Like everybody can make a short film now. Not everybody should. It's one of those things.
I see.
90% weren't good. But out
that's
of
what
those,
Film Threat seriously once said about a feature that I made.
Said,
Mr. Learnish, learn your craft. Yeah. Just because everybody can make a feature now doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
Yeah. They actually said that's that right. I represented a new crisis in cinema.
Wow.
Me, personally.
Yeah. See, dude, that's the kind of stuff you got to put on your t-shirt.
Yeah. That makes me a big
That makes you a big
The new crisis in cinema.
People are seldom right. Like, I'm sure I'm wrong that not everybody should make a short film. But
yeah. Well, has anybody gotten back to you very angry that you rejected a short?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, especially scripts. People get very upset about their scripts because it's a script competition too.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then there was a guy who actually showed up at the festival this year whose film didn't get in, but he wanted to see what the whole deal was all about and why he didn't get in. So he bought a full festival pass to come. And,
wow.
He started out angry. He did not end up angry.
Because he laughed so much at the
fire. He had a good time and he saw the quality of the films. That were
right.
There.
And when
it just kind of fueled his fire to...
To do like, better next time.
I want, look, if I could see 800 short films and they were all great, then I would make a festival that was 800 great short films long. All I want is quality stuff because people, our sponsors depend on me, like bringing them quality stuff. And the people who take meetings with these filmmakers depend on being able to meet people who've written quality stuff and have made a quality film.
Right.
That they expect that. So I don't want to put anything shitty in the face.
When if anybody knows the funny, it would be you.
Well.
Or, so you mentioned yes. Bryan Cranston. Bryan Cranston, you know, a lot of our listeners are big Breaking Bad fans.
Yes.
As are we. And he doesn't need... He can pretty much write his own ticket now.
Absolutely. He can.
Emmy winner. He basically... I'm starting to notice a trend. Any... white guy who's the lead in a series with Gary Anthony Williams is going to be an Emmy winner
they do
for
very
Best
well.
Lead
they
Actor.
Do.
It went from James Spader to Bryan Cranston.
They do very well.
Wow.
So who are you going to anoint as the next big
Emmy
winner?
Well, I am not quite sure.
Really?
That is, you know, people call me every day, Gary, would you please be on my show so I can win an Emmy? And, yes, I say.
You are kingmaker.
When I get around to it, I will do that for you.
That cloak of responsibility is so heavy.
Exactly.
But it is made of silk.
Yes. A fine, heavy silk.
But so he can write his own ticket now, thanks to you. He doesn't need to be doing short films to be doing this.
And yet he does.
And yet he does.
And what do you think it is that
you know what?
People get out of this?
Out of which one?
Out of doing the short
film. Like Cranston?
Yeah.
Cranston, I know what he gets out of it. He, if I can tell the story of last...
I insist.
I saw him walking. I was walking my dog, and he was walking his dog. And he's like, hey, I'm doing these shorts on the internet. You want to do it? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, I just thought, you know, I've been doing so much serious stuff lately. I think it's time to just do something funny.
Yeah.
So that was his whole motivation. But then at the same time, that company that we did him for want to try to make him into TV shows. So it's another means to an end. Even though he's a very busy guy, he wanted to do something funny, something that the networks didn't go, but do it this way, where he had control over it.
Right.
And then it still has a possibility of making another TV show out of it.
Awesome. And you were in it?
Yeah, yeah.
And where can I find
this? It's called The Handlers. It's on Atom.com, ATOM.
Oh, look at that. Guess where I'm going?
Well, you don't have to, but you should. But and it was like straight from this French show. It was a French show, probably the same name in French. Like, literally the same scripts.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, another French
and what's
internet
weird,
series.
You didn't even translate it.
Didn't even translate
it. No, speaking French.
Yes. Well, we mumbled a lot. People, are they speaking American, they would say? But I know him for definitely. It's just an opportunity to do something that's totally in his control and that's funny.
That's awesome.
And that was it. Yeah.
Wow. Love that story.
I know.
And then you walked your dogs together. That's
no,
it romantic.
Was no, he was walking. That was we didn't.
That's
walk
romantic.
It just happened.
That's
it
really just happened. It's romantic.
There is still obviously a lot of money and effort spent on turning shorts, whatever their origin, into longer form content.
Sure.
You know, we still try to turn sketches on Saturday Night Live into feature films.
Sure. MacGruber.
You were in the Jiminy Glick movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Which originated as a series of unbelievably funny short pieces on Martin Short's short-lived show. And so do you find yourself thinking that way? Like, okay, I would like to turn this short piece into long form. Or do you sort of feel like, you know, this was the form it was meant to be?
That's a very cool question.
Well, you're on Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
You'd expect a Norwegian to ask your question.
That is, by the way, my heritage.
That's why. Very
yeah,
nice.
See, he is
that's
Norwegian.
Why
look at you.
Such a great
nail
question.
That.
Yeah,
oh,
did.
You smell the fish.
That's the dogs. That's, I'm sorry.
Oh, those are the dogs.
Yeah, that's that. The
there are short films that you watch and go, that should be a feature.
Right.
And then there are some that's like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like it might be an amazing calling card, or it just might just be a lovely little appetizer before something else, but that's just what it is. So it really goes both ways. And in the festival, some of them clearly should be. Like, you could see that blown up, and people would want to go pay $12 at a theater to see it. And some are just what they are.
Right. And do you, as then the festival artistic director, take that responsibility to usher those things into
We try to help people, like, literally as much as we can.
Yeah.
We'll put them in our best of fest. People get meetings. People get money. I think more important are probably the meetings. You know, when you can guarantee somebody an in-office meeting with Mosaic, or if they're an animator with a big animation company, you know, production company, then that means a lot. I mean, that's what your career is about. That's why you do stuff.
Right.
You can get in front of the people who can help your career.
Right.
You know? I also think, though, the opportunity, you know, in this day and age where you can see shorts programmed online and you can see them, you know, on your phone and all these things, the opportunity to actually get to see your work with an audience is not to be undervalued either, because that's
funny,
a huge learning.
Even the guys at Funny or Die say that. They're like, they usually do their big, they have a night on opening night where they have a bunch of their films on opening night, a celebrity block. And even them, it's like we see these things all the time on our computers.
In the office.
But to see them in front of an audience makes all the difference in the world to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Know? And that's kind of weird to me.
But, is that weird?
Well, no, but to them, like, it's like they have a big name in internet comedy from
right.
Die Now. But the fact that they love seeing their stuff on the big screen. It's weird. It's great, you know, because they get to see everyone.
But I think when you get to the point where you can't learn anything from an audience watching your work, it's probably time to call it quits.
Oh, really? Because
you've stopped.
But you're a businessman.
I thought that's when I can literally declare I now know everything. But I will continue to go to teach you people stuff.
Right. Well, that's sort of what Phil said.
Potato, potato.
No, I do agree. And
because we learn nothing better than when we're teaching it to someone else.
Yes, yes. Oh, I've learned so much by teaching. But, you know, yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And I know that they do learn when they get to see that, because even the quality of what they gave us to show on the first year, we've only been around 3 years.
Amazingly.
On the first year, compared to what they show now, is 3,000 times better. Like,
wow.
Their stuff is so quality now. It's like really...
That's
really good stuff now.
Awesome. So where's the future of the festival go then? Does it get bigger?
We're gonna sell out.
Sell out?
We're gonna get a company come in, like Jane's lubricated condoms, or Swishy's malt liquor.
Swishy's malt liquor.
Just a swish. It's all it takes.
Too bad Chilpak couldn't have got it.
Oh,
yeah.
Might
still be with
Chilpak Comedy Festival.
Oh, yeah.
The future, I'm not quite sure where the future is. I mean, the other side of LA Comedy Shorts is we're also a production company.
Ah, right.
So I would like at some point to take some of these, like the winning scripts or the shorts that are able to be developed into features and do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And join up with those filmmakers or those screenwriters and make that happen.
Make that happen. Yeah. That's
but right
awesome.
Now, it's actually, it's the largest comedy film festival in the U.S. And that's, yeah. That's
in 3D, in 3 years.
3 years. But because we have something that people want to see.
Right.
And we have something that the industry actually wants and they need. Like, yeah. They want it.
It's true.
Los Angeles has so many film festivals, and some are well-known, but there is no mistaking the fact that Los Angeles is not a good film festival town.
Not at all.
It's not
swallowed up here.
And because even though it's an industry town, that's also the problem. It's an industry town. There's always something going on. And then the second challenge, so you've overcome that challenge, but the other thing is that when festivals really work, they, no matter what importance they have with the industry, it's also because they're fostering this kind of sense of community.
Yeah.
So that's why, like for me, the most fun long-form festival in Los Angeles is Outfest.
Mm-hmm.
Because the gay community is just that. It's an actual community.
Right.
It isn't just another industry event. Right. And it sounds like you kind of have created
the,
this
beauty
community.
Is like we will see filmmakers who had a film in the first year and somebody who had a film in the first year. And then they come back as individuals, they were there.
Right.
And then they come back in year three and now they've done a film together.
Ah.
Some show together. And then that really happens a lot. People meet each other there. Writers meet filmmakers or filmmakers meet filmmakers. And they do this thing where they hook up and then they produce
something even more amazing.
Yeah, it really is cool. And that's a very common thing that we have seen.
That is awesome.
Years, yeah.
And now, but what about you personally? Where do we see you on the big sponsor? You're done.
Finished.
That's it?
Now that you did that Hot in Cleveland,
I did an episode of Hot in Cleveland. I fell through a... Oh, no, that was on the other show.
You played a football coach drama director.
He was you know what? That's
you were
funny.
Directing Romeo and
he was
Julia.
Supposed to be a soccer coach, but everything they had him do was very football coachish.
Right.
So, he was a football soccer coach.
Okay. Well,
drama
when
director.
I said football, of course, being
European
as I am,
I meant
what you would call soccer.
Yeah.
But when I read, every time I would read it, I would think they were talking about football.
Right.
But it was supposed to be soccer, but it was definitely...
But there is a really funny, like, recurring thing where, like, if the actors blow a line or flub a cue, Gary makes them get down and give them 20.
It's like push-up. That was fun. And here's why that was fun. Number one, Betty White is an institution.
Right.
And then
you knew her from Boston League, and didn't you work with her?
No, we missed each other.
Oh,
like,
is that
literally,
right?
We just, I think she was Spader's assistant.
Yeah, right? Sutton.
And then she left, and then I came on.
That's right.
So I never got to meet her, but she is so funny. It's hard to, people are like, is she so funny for her age? It's like, no,
she's funny.
She is as sharp and as an improver dude.
Yeah.
She is as sharp as you can freaking get. Like, nobody's going to say something and she misses it and not able to talk. There's a reason they give her all the punchlines on that show, because she really is just freaking brilliantly funny.
Now, how did
she has that rare ability where even when you see the joke coming,
it's still
funny.
Yeah.
Is it, but she's in her 80s.
She's in her 80s and she says she has a hearing problem. And still, I swear to you, dude, if you just sit here and talk to her, it's not like, oh man, she is still so good. It's just like,
holy
she
crap.
Is just fucking great.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, is
we've talked about the Hot in Cleveland before. And,
yes,
and just
we enjoy the show.
We enjoy it. We both blame
female relationships.
Having to watch it on our relationship with sure. women, you know. Yeah.
That's unstarted.
Well, you know, our girlfriends watch it, so
yeah, you got
it.
Yeah,
it would be like
you have to. You take one for the team.
Yeah,
but it really is kind of pleasing to have a traditional sitcom that you can enjoy.
They're back. You know? The traditional sitcom is back because of stuff like Hot in Cleveland, TV Land.
Yeah.
And then on the Black side, I don't appreciate everything he does, but I appreciate what he's trying to do. I guess,
which is
Tyler Perry. His sitcoms that he has, which
Well, what about this fight between him and Spike Lee? I mean, that seems...
Oh, I haven't read... I just saw something on my Yahoo homepage. Oh, that yeah. What it was about.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's pretty horrible.
Yeah. Well, and Spike Lee thinks he's...
Tyler Perry.
Oh. Tyler Perry. Spike Lee thinks Tyler Perry is taking the black community back 50 steps.
Yeah.
In his portrayals.
Did he say 50 dancing steps? That would have been taking us back, too, if he had said that. If he said that he's making the black community tap dance backwards 50 steps, that in itself is racist.
I think right there is the dilemma of the whole argument.
I will tell you what. I was home in Atlanta. I was with my family, and they were showing. This is when Tyler Perry's show, before it came out anywhere else, and there were 6 episodes that were test marketing, and I was watching with my family, and I was like, what is this? They were like, this is Tyler Perry's new show. You don't have it out there? I was like, no. And I watched it, and it couldn't have been more shitty. And I then deemed it the shitcom.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like not like a shit. It's a very shitty sitcom, the shitcom. And but they were watching it.
Yeah.
If black people are on TV, other black people will watch them.
Right.
Because there really is a rare opportunity to see black-led shows, if you just think, what's on TV right now? There's very few of them.
But growing up, I watched The Jeffersons, What's Happening.
Yeah, you watched that. Now, yeah. Now that stuff is no longer around.
Well, no, that's the interesting thing, is that by the 90s, you know, if you were watching a black family sitcom, no matter how traditional it was, you were watching, like, I guess, what at the time, UPN, or maybe the WB.
Yeah, you go off network.
You were doing that. And yet it had been less than 10 years earlier where Bill Cosby was raising everyone's kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And you were missing great work. I mean, like, David Alan Greer was doing great work. And it was stunning to me that it could get marginalized when it was the most mainstream of entertainment.
Yeah, that is weird. I don't know how it made that leap. But it did.
It was almost like what you said, if you have black people on television, black people will watch it. So therefore, we don't need to spend money marketing it or doing anything.
I guess.
Because we can make money off of this.
But now, what Tyler Perry did was he came along and he has this new Tyler Perry formula, which is you shoot them all up front.
Right.
100 episodes, so it's instant syndication. He did the biggest TV deal in the history of TV deals as far as financially goes.
How big?
And then he shoved them all on air, and TBS had no say-so over
quality.
He had full rights as far as all of that kind of stuff goes. And now other people, the Ice Cube's company, which is Cube Vision, they're doing the exact same formula. And now white TV, there's some white TV that's crossed over into it, is also doing the exact same formula. Shoot them all up front.
Sell them all in a package?
Instant syndication, sell them as a package.
Right, and which is how Hee Haw. That's the model of Hee Haw, was this exact same thing. Model. Remember?
You always bring it back to Hee Haw.
Hee Haw is the economic TV.
If you talk anywhere within 2 hours, you're going to bring something back around to Hee Haw. I remember that horrible quake in Japan, and somehow you were able to sensibly and rightfully so bring it back around to Hee Haw.
It's all about Buck Owens. Yeah, he's the center point. He's the center.
I would like to say that you began that by saying you remember that quake in Japan. Remember that.
A lot of
people, I remember it like it happened just last month.
It's been so long, a lot of people forgot. But okay, all that to say about Tyler Perry, and TV Land is, the traditional sitcom, it really is back. And people are looking at making Mike and Molly, for instance, is another one.
Right.
People are looking at making those again.
I know, but I'm so afraid that the quality of writing has dissipated to the winds in that gap that happened, that you're not going to find those guys who can do that heavy labor of making a great sitcom like you did in the days of Seinfeld and Friends and, you know, whatever golden age that was. Like. Yeah.
But you go back. I mean, there's always been great writing in sitcoms.
I know.
Because there were great writers.
But there was also an educational system. Hello.
You're really
bitter.
Why are you so mad?
I'm not mad. Well, because he's American.
Right. I can express my rage.
Finally, you got reason to be mad.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have to repress that rage anymore.
Canadian days are gone. Screw you!
You don't have to repress the racism. You get to be openly racist now. Welcome to America.
Jump on the train.
Dude.
But sit at the front. You don't want to be at the back with those people.
Oh, that was a thing here at one time, wasn't it?
Now, we only have a few minutes left, and so I would like to ask, and either of you can feel free to
answer this.
Sure.
Tell me about something called Karma Spree.
Karma Spree, I keep getting him to dust off. Because now someone from, I love to say my production company.
Yes, she was very lovely.
Even though it's just an office.
That's something.
Please, Dean, you take the lead on Karma Spree, and then I'm going to just hop in and say stuff.
Well, Karma Spree is a script I wrote.
Yeah.
Is that even good English?
That is.
Yeah, sure. It's a story about a guy who's meditating to develop very high level of positive karma so that he can go and remove the most evil man in the world and take that hit to his karma and balance out the planet.
Yeah.
So it has all of this internal logic, but he has no car and no gun. So he has to go to the baddest guy he remembered from high school and join up with him, who also happens to be a very lousy drug dealer. And so he agrees to go with this guy, and it's a buddy road trip.
Now, Dean wrote this, but whenever I describe it to someone, I say, there's a guy who's saving up all his karma points so he can go and kill his girlfriend, his ex-girlfriend's boyfriend.
Right.
Is that right?
That's right. Because then it turns out halfway through the movie, he finds out the most evil guy is just the ex-girlfriend's. Spoiler. Yeah. But that then pisses off the whole thing. It then goes off the rails from there.
It's such a funny script.
Thank you, sir. It would be, well, I don't know. I'm getting a little old to be that hippie kid.
I'm never too old to drive a car. My father proved that when he plowed into several pedestrians.
The farmer's market.
He did. He didn't do that. He did not.
At this point,
he was too busy dancing backwards.
Yeah.
See,
dancing backwards.
I think it's a Rational Exuberance, whatever production joint venture. With the success of our documentary and the millions that'll bring in, this
because I told him, you know, the first time I read it, I didn't get it. I mean, not that I didn't get it, but it was like, and the reason why was I was kind of reading it from the point of view of an audience member and visualizing how I thought that movie would be made. And it wasn't funny.
Right.
And then I thought about how I would shoot it, you know, and then I read it again and loved it. And went beyond finding it funny. I went, oh my God, oh, that's cool. That's really interesting.
But to me, the whole idea of someone being so nice to do a bad act, and then on the way, on this road trip, screwing up all the good things that he's done.
But right.
You accidentally kill a black bear.
Yeah, a bear, the crow, like his karma points start diminishing on the road.
Can you agree with me, though, that like it could so easily take the approach, like if a studio got the hold of it or something, of like being Hangover 3.
Yes.
That's a good approach. Money.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Studio
get a hold of it. Don't listen to him. He's Norwegian, man. What's the last good Norwegian film you've seen?
You're right.
Yeah.
I haven't seen
it. They made a movie called Dead Snow about zombies.
Nazi zombies.
Okay. Very funny.
They made a movie. The whole country got together.
Oh, yeah. That's part of the
got a camera. I got a camera.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
our guest turned on me.
Yeah, see so that? Fast. Well, he saw you try to pitch a directing gig. No.
That's not why I turned on him when he said, let's not make it
Hangover 3.
Hangover 3.
Oh, right.
And then he's right. It should be Hangover like 4.
Anyway, the point is, it's a hilarious script. I'm looking forward to doing it with you in some capacity.
We should do that.
Yeah, and
it's a good movie.
And not only that, it's now relatively inexpensive to do. We have a very high def camera package right there.
And also, the idea of creating intimacy now with these characters, as opposed to, again, that's why I bring up The Hangover, and I know that people love it. But you know, the kind of the more authentic the characters are, the funnier than it
I which is comes. You know, it's one of those cases where how much money do you want to make?
Well, exactly.
So, Dean, you decide that.
Okay.
We'll decide which way to
go. I'm going to write a number on a piece of paper.
If you don't want to make that much
and
money.
And I'm sliding it across the table.
That cheapens it. But if you don't want to make that much money, you just go, you know what? I don't want to make that much. Or
the tax liability is extraordinary. Just,
totally. Uh-oh. Well, now the phone's ringing off the hook here at the offices.
Because people are calling to invest.
They're already, they just heard this.
No, that's so funny. Now I'm going to go back and read the script.
Yes.
In your way.
As a filmmaker.
As a filmmaker.
Yeah, that would be great.
Because I only read it as an actor.
Yeah.
Who drives an automobile. Wow.
That's always
that's what I took it. That's why I think America will see.
That is awesome. Awesome.
Oh, that was my other thing. No release in America. Yeah. I thought it becomes so much cooler if you don't let America see it.
Yeah, just America Norway.
Hey, can we see this?
No,
in your face, America. Yeah.
They'll get an Olympic conference call.
That's and right. And we saw it all in Norway.
Yeah. Let's see if just like an Eastern European, exclusive Eastern European release.
Yeah. Comedy release.
Do you really think that's the wisest? Yeah. You know what?
Maybe.
Now that I see, okay, what you're going. Yeah.
Yeah, I spent 3 years as a distribution executive, so you can trust me.
All I have for you is trust. I think you're doing the right thing. Yeah, awesome. Let's do this.
Awesome.
Let's
we're doing it.
Norway.
Well, right. We thank
anything
you.
Anything else that we need to plug?
Yeah.
We're out of time.
We're out of time.
Websites?
I so love what you guys are doing with this television that you listen to. What do you call it? Radio.
Radio, yes. Changing the way you listen to the internet.
Wow.
That's what we're doing.
I would like to get into that someday. And just, I had a sweet knee operation recently. So,
you did?
Yeah.
So, same one I had?
What'd you have?
ACL replacement.
Nah, mine was simple. It was like just a meniscus tear.
Do you, like Dean, watch the video of the surgery?
I have it, and I haven't watched it. I would watch it. I literally, until like 2 days ago, for real, I forgot that I had the video.
Oh, my gosh.
I got it about a month
ago. I'm surprised it didn't get screened during the LA Comedy Short.
I didn't even think about it.
My God, it made me nauseous. It's so awesome.
I would come over to his house, and he would be watching it.
Over and over again.
And I had kind of understood, because it sort of was his best work.
Ah!
Oh, snapples!
Go-ting! Bazanger. Oh, well. Thank you so much, Gary, for being on the show.
It's fun. Gary Anthony Williams.
Yay. Where's your website?
Can I don't have one, but you can go to my film festival, lacomedyshorts.com.
There you go.
Look, I have one, but it's just stupid. It's just for my agents.
Yeah.
lacomedyshorts.com. Sign up on the mailing list, and then we'll let you know when the next festival is coming up.
Fantastic.
We'll put that link right on our website, chillpackhollywood.com, where you can find this millions. Episode and all our old episodes, and even subscribe via iTunes.
And you can follow us everywhere.
You can become a friend of the show on MySpace.
We're still on MySpace.
The abandoned amusement park of the internet, myspace.com/chillpackhollywood. Like the sitcom.
It's coming back.
It's coming back.
You can become a liker of the show on Facebook. Please do. Facebook.com/ Chill Pack Hollywood.
Where would one go if they wanted to just be indifferent about your show? Well, where
would they check off? Listen to this podcast. Yeah.
Directly. chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. Follow Dean Haglund on Twitter. He's twitter.com/dhaglund.
You are.
Well, it's LA Comedy Shorts, I think.
Is your Twitter?
That's what I Twitter straight from there.
LA Comedy Shorts.
And I'm twitter.com/PhilLarenis.
Thank you, Gary, once again. Until next week.
Thank you, guys.
Your lead handgun, I'm Helen Spires. We'll talk to you next week.
That's right.